Kurt and Kate Mornings, not just on the radio.
It's a podcast, too.
March is Self-Harm Awareness Month, and we didn't want the month to pass by without talking about this, because this is a super important topic.
Yeah, and we got a lot of wisdom from Dr. Joni DeBrito with Focus on the Family.
This is one of those very difficult topics for us to discuss. And I guess maybe the place for us to begin is, why do people intentionally harm themselves?
The biggest reason, Kurt, is that they don't understand how to cope with disappointment or sadness or other feelings, especially overwhelming feelings, well. So instead of maybe talking or emoting or what have you, what they will do is they will hurt themselves to try to externalize the emotional pain they feel. So for instance, if you injure yourself physically, you can really get in touch with that feeling by looking down and maybe seeing a swollen wrist or your skin bleeding or a broken bone or something like that. With emotional pain, it's very hard to connect with it. And so it helps people, some people, to connect if they do something that brings about that physical pain. Now, most of these people are teenagers or college students. About 17% of teenagers admit to self-injury. So it's probably a higher number. That's just the number that admit. And about 15% of college students, about 5% of adults. So externalizing the pain is one of the biggest things that people are trying to do. And then the other thing is that sometimes people will self-harm for attention. They feel as if they're not able to connect with others and that maybe this is something that will allow them to get some attention, the attention of other people.
Hmm. We were talking earlier about how some people just feel invisible. How can we best help people not feel that way and then go out and act out in different ways?
That's a really good question, Kate, and it does seem to be that those who are isolating a lot are more prone to hurting themselves, again, especially in young people. And so, you know, one of the things that's so important is for parents, grandparents, pastors, mentors, friends, people to recognize when kids especially are isolating and talk to them. Talk is so important when it comes to most mental health issues, but it's the right kind of talk, which is asking open-ended questions. Tell me how things are going. How is your life right now? What do you think about XYZ? Instead of, are you okay? Because someone's just going to say yes or no, and then that kind of closes down the conversation. And then once someone starts talking, you need to listen. Regardless of what they're saying, there may be things that they say that are troubling, but the more you hear what they have to say, the more you know how much help they might need and also what kind of help a son or daughter might need or someone else that you're coming in contact with that appears to be self-harming.
Yeah. You know, one of the biggest challenges with this age group is really the openness, and it can be very challenging because I love the way you frame that. Like, are you okay is not a question to ask because they can shut down, you know, and it's a bit ambiguous. But it is an age that, you know, they tend to climb up. They don't really want to talk about it. But what I've found to be true of teenagers in general with my own two boys is that I have to be available and aware of what's going on with our conversations, even when it's inconvenient, because usually when it's convenient for them, it's not convenient for me. Like, it could be late at night or whatever the case may be. We as parents, we need to be on top of this. We need to say, okay, when they are willing to talk, I need to be there.
That is such a great point, Kurt. I agree with you there. And the other thing that I would say is that the more you have those open conversations and listen to your children, the more you start to pick up on their cues of when they're open to a conversation and when they aren't. My kids are older now. They're 38 and 40, but I clearly remember going through the teenage years, and I could just look at them and tell whether or not they were open for a conversation. And if they were in one of those moods where they seemed to be open for a conversation, then I would try to kind of begin to talk with them and so forth. And all of a sudden, a lot of information would spill out. And you are right that most often it was at a time that was not convenient for me. Mm-hmm. And on the opposite end, I'd think, ooh, I'd love to have a conversation with so-and-so after school today. And that, you know, child of mine would come home and it'd be very clear to me, ah, wasn't a good day at school. It's not a good time to talk. Yeah. So it's really great for people around kids to begin to be aware of when they're open for conversation and when they're not.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of the Curt and Kate Mornings podcast. Leave your comments and your thoughts. We appreciate your feedback. You can give us a review. Also, don't forget to like us, follow us, subscribe as well. Some of the signs you alluded to, the isolation and some other, you know, let's talk about some of the other signs. Maybe there's something that's less obvious for us that might even surprise us, you know, signs that we may have a child or a grandchild who may be embracing self-harm. Is there something that we, that maybe is not super obvious?
There are a couple of things, obviously, or well, I shouldn't say obviously, but it might not be as obvious would be having friends or family members who self-injure. Obviously, living in that social isolation is very big as well. Experiencing a lot of stressful life situations. And then one of them that might be as obvious as those are, and then I'll mention a couple other that are pretty obvious, but one of them that might not be as obvious is if kids are wearing clothing that is not consistent with the weather, which would be really obvious in a place like Florida where you have a lot of warm, humid weather. So if you have a lot of, let's say it's a 95-degree day and it's 95% humidity and you have, or maybe a week like that, where a child or a teen is walking around in hoodies with long sleeves all day, you might wonder about that because that's not the normal way to dress when it's that warm outside. But kids who are trying to hide their cutting or burning or scratching or whatever will often wear clothing like that. So that's something to watch out for.
What should you do if you know someone who is self-harming? What are the next steps?
So the first thing you should do is the same thing that we recommend with anything, including if you are worried that your child might be thinking about suicide. You directly and very calmly talk to your child about it. And the best way to do that is to talk about how you are feeling, because kids will not respond well to, actually no one responds well to what may sound accusatory. What are you doing with yourself? Why are you in your room? Those kinds of things don't go well. It would be better to say, you know, I've noticed that you've been in your room a lot and I'm concerned about what might be going on there. Can we talk about that? Often kids who are isolated and maybe hurting themselves and feeling very deep emotions, they also have a high level of empathy. So they don't want their parents to feel worried or their grandparents or mentors or pastors or whomever. And that they're much more likely to talk with you if you say, this is how it's affecting me. I'm a little bit scared here. I'm a little bit worried here.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's really good. I've learned so much in our conversation, Joni. Thank you for being with us here today. And also, I should mention, we have links to some resources through Focus on the Family to help folks who are dealing with this themselves. Maybe they're self-harming and they're listening this morning, or maybe they have a son or daughter or a grandchild who is dealing with this as well. So the Alive to Thrive website is a good place to begin. Is there another place and Focus on the Family's website that would be helpful?
Well, you can always go to focusonthefamily.com/parenting. We have a number of articles about self-harm and other mental health issues as well. And the other thing to always be aware of is that Focus on the Family has a counseling department, and there are counselors available Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time. So that would be 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. in the Eastern Time Zone to provide consultations for either teens or parents or grandparents or pastors or whomever. And what someone would need to do is call the number 855-771-4357, which is 771-HELP, and request for a counselor to call him or her back. And that counselor will call back and provide a consultation and answer any questions that the caller may have, or also provide referrals in their state for a licensed mental health professional that also adheres to an evangelical statement of faith.
Wow. You have to make sure that when you're going to a counselor, you know, as followers of Jesus, it's a totally different ballgame. And it's not always easy to find a biblical Christ-centered counselor these days, mm-hmm. is it?
No, it's not. And our database has counselors from all over the country. And so typically, you can find someone in your area. And if you can't find someone in your area, there are many of the counselors in that database that do virtual counseling. So if you happen to live in a rural area and you're concerned about a child, grandchild, or a child in your youth group, what have you, you can be able to find someone that you can get via that virtual telehealth counseling. So you don't have to say, oh gosh, there are no counselors in our area, there's no help. There is help available. And counseling is really the best defense against this in helping kids not only learn how to manage their emotions better so that they're not hurting themselves, but it's also great for parents and family members who are concerned, and also good for prevention of other issues.
Thanks for listening to Kurt and Kate Mornings Podcast. Please take a minute to follow, subscribe, and review us. And no matter where in the world you are, you can listen to us live from 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays on the Moody Radio app.